2024 is the 80th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. And people are out invading other areas, apparently. But with that, we will conduct a roll call for this committee.
Roll call. Director Bilodeau? Director Bilodeau?
I am present.
Director Tran? Director Yeo?
Here.
Director Whitaker?
Here.
Director Sheldon?
Here.
Director Amezcua? Director Meeks? Director Nguyen? Director Wigand? Director Green?
Director Tran? You're muted, Director Tran.
I'm here. Okay, I'm here.
By the narrow Okay, Mr. General Manager, there are items received too late to have been agendized.
There are items.
Visitor participation, we don't have anybody virtually or here wishes to address, so we'll move on. But we have one item on the consent calendar this morning, the minutes from May 2nd. I would entertain a motion on that, or if there are any questions.
I'll move to approve.
Thank you.
I'll second.
All right, moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Roll call. Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
That motion passes 5-0.
Excellent. We have two matters for consideration. First is the state legislative update. Yes, Jason, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Jason Gonsalves. I will start with just a brief update as to the legislative actions. May 17th was the fiscal committee deadline, and given the state general fund or projected deficit, we saw a number of bills, a larger number of bills held on suspense due to potential state costs. So just quick numbers, the assembly had 774 bills. They held 307 and passed 467. So they cut that down by about 40%. Which is unprecedented in the House of Origin or unusual. In the Senate, they had 341 bills, and they held 87 of those, so about 20-plus percent of those bills. I bring that up only to suggest there's about 1,000 bills remaining, and all the Assembly bills have moved to the Senate, and Senate bills have moved to the Assembly. And legislative timeline speaking, they are here the month of June. They're gone the month of July, they being the legislature, and they're back the month of August for the final 30 days to vet about 1,000 bills. Moving on, the one item I am covering, SB 1147, the district had an oppose unless amended position, most notably because of the requirements of the bill and the science not being available. We're pleased to report the bill was amended on April 10th. The concerns of the district, we believe, were addressed. There's no longer the requirements on science. It now refers back to the existing law and the health and safety code. The bill has no opposition as of May 16th on the floor. It is supported by the voice of choice advocacy and California environmental voters, Californians Against Waste, and other environmental groups. But all other opposition has been removed, and the staff recommendation is to go from oppose unless amended to neutral based on the amendments that were taken back in April. So with that, I'll stop there. Happy to answer any questions or turn it over to Don and Jason.
Any questions? I do have just one quick question, which is, do you think the reduction, the extraordinary reduction in bills was a consequence of the state's budget condition, the prospect for revenue?
Absolutely. I think you saw the House of Origin in both houses. You know, typically the assembly appropriations will pass more assembly bills and let the Senate kind of be the bad guys and gals, so to speak. But we saw an unprecedented level in recognition of potentially upwards of a $70 billion budget deficit. I should note they will have a June 15th budget. There's not an agreement between legislative leadership and the governor thus far. I hear rumblings that they're close. And then also June 27th is the deadline for the legislature to put any bonds or negotiated initiatives on the ballot. So things are going to move quickly. But to answer your question, yes, I think the budget deficit is obviously the dark cloud hanging over both houses.
There's a good side to that, I guess. Director Sheldon has a question as well.
Thank you, Chairman Whitaker. I have a few questions. The first one is, what does the bill do now in light of the amendments?
The bill still has criteria to inform the public health to the extent there's toxic levels or harmful levels in plastics, but the information or informing process is pertinent to existing law, the Health and Safety Code Section 116365, which means the science has to be there and it has to meet existing law. So it no longer has the expedited you shall report by, I think the date was 2025, harmful plastic levels that the science, at least the district's view and others, was not readily available.
This was for the first bill we have on our discussion you're referring to?
I'm referring to, I should have your agenda, SB 1147. I should know the order, Director Sheldon. But
I read it. I know we have two bills. One's more groundwater extraction, I thought, and the other one is plastics.
This is the plastics one.
I was referring to the first one. Because the first one is where we had the watch.
Yes, that one, Mr. Gilbert is going to address.
Thank you. So in regard to the second one, thank you. In light of the change, a lot of there not being any opposition, does the bill really do anything anymore?
It just sets up at least my read of it, and I think your staff's read, is it sets up drinking water standards for microplastics under existing law. So it puts microplastics in a category to be considered by the department.
Is it a category they can't achieve? Those that bottle the water?
It falls under the same harmful criteria of existing law rather than what the prior version of the bill said you had to meet a specified date. So if the science isn't there, they can't inform the public and create, I'll call it hysteria, absent the science and determinations through existing law.
Okay. And then my last question for you is in relation to all the West Code books that are behind you, Do you guys buy the pocket parts every year to update them, or they just look nice up there?
We do keep them updated because one thing you get out of those books, as you know, versus the internet, is the legislative history. And it tells you which bills created those problems.
Those books are great. Yeah, Wes, are great. Exactly. Thank you. Those are all my questions. So I can call you if I have a question. Is that okay?
Absolutely. I have a question. Who's that young lady in your picture next to you?
I don't know. Yeah, I got really. That's a question of me being really loved, or me really fortunate, and definitely marrying up. So yeah, that's Robin.
Appreciate it.
Seeing no further hands, we're ready for Don Gilbert's report. Maybe clarify on that 1147 as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Directors. I'm going to be talking about AB 2079, which is the first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my mistake. Sure.
Yeah, no problem. First of all, I want to say that I have it on good authority that's wallpaper behind Jason. For the record, and I don't buy the smoke and mirrors from Jason. So anyway, AB 2079 by Assemblymember Bennett, who represents portions of Ventura County, would essentially regulate large diameter, high capacity wells, and the water world was largely opposed to the bill for a variety of reasons after it was introduced, including Orange County Water District. The author took some substantive amendments, a number of them, one that exempts certain wells, a notable Amendment for OCWD, among others, is it exempts drinking water wells of an urban retail water supplier. There's other helpful exemptions. It exempts injection wells, for example. So these and other amendments taken by the author to a little extent sort of downgraded the opposition, but there's still opposition. There's still a coalition of agencies opposing the bill, and the bill limped off the assembly floor with 41 votes, you know, out of 80. So it's certainly not, you know, without challenges. A couple of the issues that remain in the bill go to subsidence, and one goes to subsidence, the other goes to replacement wells. And so it's my understanding that staff is recommending an oppose unless amended based on having amendments that address those two issues, the elasticity of subsidence and replacement wells. Happy to answer any questions or defer to staff on their recommendation.
Thank you. I'm just going to ask, is it possible to up the volume a little bit?
I rarely get that request.
any questions by directors? Sure. Yes.
Just for the purposes of this position, going from an opposed to opposed unless amended, the only benefit to this is so that we can send out another letter with the specific amendment that our staff, Roy Herndon, drafted. It's just a way to spread our amendment around and to get more of an audience. That's the only reason.
Okay. Any other comments, or as far as our position on both of these bills, everyone's comfortable with the way stated at the moment? Okay, speak now or forever hold your peace. So we'll keep that the way it is. Okay, so with that, thank you for your report. Very much appreciate it. And we're ready for our federal report at this point. Eric?
Did you want to go?
Thank you. Good morning or afternoon, everybody.
You know what? I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of things. We do need to take a vote on that. I thought we were just holding pat. But
I'll move the recommendations.
Thank you, Director Young.
I will second the motion.
All right. Moved and seconded. So a roll call vote, please.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
That passes 5-0.
Excellent. Okay, Eric, sorry. We'll do a real start here.
No problem. Good afternoon. Real start. So I've got a couple items to give you an update on, and I'll happily answer any questions. On appropriations, I just want to tell you that I think it's old news, but Representative Correa and Representative Kim did put in separate requests under the earmark process known as community project requests for PFAS cleanup for the district. Representative Kim supported the district's direct request for $5 million. Representative Correa supported Santa Ana's request for $5 million. And I believe, if I remember this correctly, Alicia and Gina and the general manager supported the Santa Ana effort. And I think hats off to Director Bilodeau for pushing the effort, particularly with Representative Correa. So from a going forward position, we are in a good position. Because you have basically a $10 million total request for PFAS cleanup between the two requests. As far as timing goes in the House, June 28th, the Subcommittee on Interior that funds EPA, and I should have mentioned, this money would come through EPA's State and Tribal Assistance Grants Program, similar to what you've received to date. June 28th, the House Subcommittee on Interior Appropriations will mark up. And the chairman, Tom Cole from Oklahoma, has said July 9th will be when they go to full committee and mark up the bill. Our assumption is that both requests will be honored There is the possibility, because of budget cuts, that they may give haircuts to all community project requests that members submit. But right now, you're looking at a $10 million total request from delegation members. On the Senate side, we will hopefully know next week, perhaps the following week at the latest, what Senator Padilla and Senator Butler requested of the Senate Committee on Appropriations for the district. At this stage, I did want to point out one thing. Regardless of who wins your Senate race, whoever that member becomes senator, whether it is Garvey or Schiff, they will become a United States Senator on November 6th. Senator Butler is gone as of the election. So just point that out. Whoever does fill the Butler seat, tradition suggests that they pick up the Butler requests and move forward in supporting them. So hopefully Senator Padilla's folks will continue to support the district, and that Senator Butler put a request in for the district also. So that's where we're on appropriations. Actually, one other point. We will not see a final spending bill for EPA or any of the key spending bills until after the election. That's a given. They're already talking about doing a continuing resolution to get them into November, December timeframe. And there is the possibility that if former President Trump were to win election, that they would probably kick over the appropriations bills until 2025, when the new president takes office and the new Congress takes office, and then they would cut a deal then. But right now, let's be sort of optimistic about getting these bills done before January. So that's where we are, Mr. Chair, on appropriations. Following up on the appropriations, I just want to give you a quick report out on the General Manager and President Green's trip to D.C. I think in summary, we can say that they had good meetings. They reinforced, and by virtue of what we saw with the formal request being submitted, put forward the importance of the PFAS cleanup, talked about the issues of compliance with PFAS liability, put to the members and committee staff that we met with the issue of how important it is to recognize what the burden is across the board when it comes to both the MCL and PFAS liability. And I think it's fair to say, particularly at EPA, in our meetings with them, they were very good, and it resulted in the acting assistant administrator for the Office of Water requesting a tour of, I believe, is it Anaheim, Gina or Alicia? Anaheim, thank you. Yeah. So in a couple of days, I believe, what, June 7th or 9th or thereabouts?
Monday, June 10th.
June 10th, sorry. Bruno Piggott will be touring the facility in Anaheim. The reason that's important is that he will have a firsthand understanding of how important this issue is for OCWD and may help in getting funding going forward for the cleanup. So I think in sum, it was a good opportunity for the general manager to meet some of the delegation folks and also get an understanding firsthand on how the policy process is so dysfunctional right now, but that we are making progress. I think from a last issue that I want to talk to you about, which is somewhat important, CISA, which is part of the Department of Homeland Security, which is the cybersecurity infrastructure safety agency, or security agency, excuse me, put out a rule about a week and a half ago that I think we flipped to Gina and Alicia, that imposes some very burdensome mandates on reporting ransomware and or cyber hacks on critical infrastructure, of which the water agencies are identified at the federal level as critical infrastructure. In a nutshell, if you have a cyber hack, you have 72 hours to report to DHS or the state and or the state, and then 24 hours if you have a ransomware attack. So you're looking at some new reporting requirements. but for, and only in the bureaucracy can this happen. When they wrote the rule, they forgot to read the underlying law that requires this rule, the Cyber Incident Response and Analysis Act. That act explicitly exempts public agencies like yourself from being enforced against by DHS. So essentially what you have here is a circumstance of a reporting standard that I guess you should say you'll voluntarily try to comply with it. But if you don't comply with it correctly or what have you, DHS cannot assess penalties against you. And then I think finally on PFAS in general and where we are on liability exemption language, we continue to sort of struggle with the fact that the Senate Democrats are sort of slow walking any kind of negotiations, particularly I put a name on it, Senator Charles Schumer, the majority leader, until after the November elections. Our conversations with the Senate Environment and Committee staff as of 2 weeks ago suggested, and I believe, you know, when the general manager and the president were back here, they met with Joe Brown, who's the lead person for Senator Shelley Moore Capito, the ranking Republican, and soon to be the next chair of the committee. They said, we're working hard to keep the exemption for everybody, including yourselves, but we are looking more likely to do something in the lame duck session just because the political hot potato that PFAS liability is right now. So we continue the good fight. We are working with the passive receivers group, and we may be putting on a congressional briefing in the House of Representatives in the coming months' time, and I'll keep you apprised of that and see if there's a way that the district can participate in that House briefing if it comes off. Chair, I'll stop there. I rushed through everything in the interest of time. Happy to answer any questions.
Director Yeo has had his hand up for some time, so I hope that we're not past that point. Director Yeo?
Thank you, Chair Whitaker. Eric, thank you very much for the presentation. My question is regarding Representative Correa's appropriation, the $5 million appropriation request. You know, obviously, he represents more than Santa Ana, you know, a few cities. Why is it only for Santa Ana? I guess we should have projects that we would spend more than $5 million, but I'm just curious.
Director Yeo, that money will come to the water district. It's just going to go to Santa Ana first. But our PFAS agreement we have with all the producers says specifically that any grant money that they might receive will have to come to OCWD. So we just had Santa Ana apply to maybe help the effort, and it appears it did. Yeah.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, thank you. I think it has better chance than when Orange applies. So thank you very much. That clears things up.
So, Director Yeo, just to sort of put a finer point on it to what the general manager was saying, the members are under strict orders by the Committee on Appropriations to limit the dollar value of the requests, plus they were limited to 15 requests in total. So this was really sort of trying to cobble together multiple requests.
Director Sheldon?
I can wait if someone else has a question.
No, I think you're next on deck here. Go ahead.
Is our good mayor from Santa Ana on the call and in the committee?
No.
Good. So I hope they don't know that we're getting the money. General manager spilled the beans.
They're aware. They're aware. Anything else? I'm not looking at the table here. Anyone have a comment?
I do have a question. Sure. Tell us more about the tour on Monday. I haven't heard that. I think I missed the email on that.
Yeah, I mentioned it last night at the board meeting, Director Sheldon, but the EPA is looking for a photo op. They've given us up to $130 million loan for PFAS.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll follow up with you. Thank you. Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I just regarding the exemption, someone that also attended John Kennedy, you attended at the infrastructure event on Friday. Didn't Senator Padilla make comments regarding the exemption and his could be inferred his support for them?
Yeah, so this is where we are sort of guardedly optimistic that as soon as they get the high sign, meaning the Democrats, from the leadership, that they can push a bill through the committee. Senator Padilla, Senator Fetterman, and Senator Kelly from Arizona, Fetterman's from Pennsylvania, that they all are receptive to figuring out a way to go forward to give an exemption. So, yes.
Do we think making his initial approval more well known will help in that process?
He has, as I understand it from talking to staff, his staff have indicated they recognize that it is a issue that has to be resolved and dealt with. And so I think, Director Sheldon, that Padilla's position is no longer one of, I don't want to talk about it. Not that it ever was, but there's an understanding, appreciation that he realizes that this is something that has to be addressed, is from what I'm hearing.
What I heard is he went further than that and he said he supported it.
That's news. I know that.
I wasn't there. I missed those comments. I was there later. What was someone there someone in this meeting that was there on Friday that heard that?
I don't recall him directly saying he supported it or
was it? He didn't specifically say support, but he recognized that there is a need for liability protection, but he did not say specifically, I support it. But it was a good nod to the messaging we've been providing.
Would that be the strongest message we've heard from him? Yeah, it seems to me what you could infer, if there's a need for it, then he would be implied and therefore it's supporting. But okay, thank you. Those are my only questions.
Thank you. And with that, if there's nothing further for this group, we'll move on to informational items. We have the Children's Water Education Festival update.
Thank you, Chair Whitaker. We have Danny Birch, who's going to give us an update on planning efforts for the festival, as well as a quick recap of the 2024 event.
Thank you, Gina. Can everyone see that okay? So as Gina mentioned, first I wanted to go through a little bit of the closeout for 2024. You can see where our festival budget was and where we came in, just a little under the budget. We also raised over $60,000 in sponsorship. And we wanted to kind of highlight some of our bigger costs, but also what goes into those costs. So for James Events, they're kind of a one-stop shop that does every big ticket item that we would need for the event, everything from planning and staffing to the restrooms, the first aid, security, carts, tables, chairs, and tents, and everything in between. And then UC Irvine, this is the facility costs and then the parking costs added together, also with a couple of additional items such as security and coffee. But with these increasing costs from UCI, we are looking into other locations for 2025, which brings me to our planning efforts for 2025. We've been researching over 60 locations. For background, the reason being that UC Irvine, we've been there since 2014, and there's a lot of benefits of this location, but they have pending construction for future years and increasing costs every year. So some of the top locations that we've looked into so far include the Huntington Beach Sports Complex, Oak Canyon Park, Orange County Fairgrounds, and then we're still considering UC Irvine. And the date will vary largely based on the location and their availability. So just to show a little bit about these three new locations that we're looking into, you can see on the left, Huntington Beach Sports Complex, in the middle, Oak Canyon Park, and then on the right, Orange County Fairgrounds. So with that, our next steps for now are to continue to research these locations and then start to visit these sites and see the feasibility of the different locations, while still continuing to coordinate with UCI. Largely thanks to Director Weigand, we've been in communications with their government affairs and marketing departments to see if maybe there's an opportunity to decrease the cost. So we will bring the following recommendations to a future ComLedge meeting, being the location and then the date based on the location. And in the meantime, we will be compiling school contact information to invite everyone that we can to the event, begin planning for registration opening around September and then updating the website as we go along. So that concludes the festival presentation, unless there are any questions.
I have a quick question involving the amounts we're paying to UCI, primarily driven by security costs, probably, right?
Parking was parking a big increase this parking. Year. Although the facilities is a larger cost overall, the parking increased by about double.
Well, I was wondering of the options there. Oak Canyon looks very good to me, but I didn't know about parking availability.
Yeah, that's something that we are looking at the site visits. We've scheduled that, but we haven't gone yet. So parking is a big thing that we have to consider. I don't know if Gina has anything to add to that.
Yeah, no, Oak Canyon has been a site we've looked at for a number of years. It's owned by James Events, so the same company that has helped plan and do all the logistics and rentals, they own that site. And so it is private, which means for us it would be a lot easier because UCI has a lot of restrictions on what we cannot do and a lot of kind of just charges for every little thing, you know, unlocking a door, locking a door. And so it adds up quite a bit. So there are a lot of positives to that site. And they have let us know that they've made enhancements. Danny visited the site. And also there is ample parking for it. They hosted, a Boy Scouts event. And so it just kind of entails us staff going out there one more time to make sure and then bringing it back to the board and kind of giving the pros and cons of each site.
That one looked promising to me. So unless council member Billy Dog vetoes the idea.
Director Sheldon has his hand.
Yes, Director Sheldon, please.
Thank you, Chairman Whitaker. How many vehicles did we need to park, and what was the total cost for the parking?
I have the cost of the parking, and the vehicles were about 300, but we also have the buses, and we have about 50 buses each day. So 300 cars and 50 buses, and the cost for parking was $35,791.
Well, that was a little over a third of the total cost of that.
Yeah, the facilities came in at $53,000, a little bit over that.
Danny, does that vehicle number, though, account for both presenters, volunteers, and the carpools coming from the schools?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
That's a lot.
We get charged per vehicle. It was $20 per day per vehicle. So. Yeah, they increased it from $12 last year. So,
like an upscale hotel.
And it's on their spring break, so no one else is parking there. So, yeah.
$20 per day per vehicle?
Yes.
I know I'm math. I wasn't a math major, but that still doesn't come out right.
Oh, there's other added costs. We rent out the entire lot for the buses and then the parking security and parking attendants as well.
Mm-hmm. But that's outrageous. I mean, that, you know, $20 a car, 300 cars, $6,000.
In 2 days of that.
$12,000, then you're still another 18. So, boy, I just think maybe we need to get a letter to the chancellor and try to get some costs changes or because, mm-hmm. you know, this is, I understand they might have to have attendants that have to staff the ingress and the egress and what have you, but you know, this is gouging, I think, to a special district in light of what we're doing.
Yeah, you're right, Director Sheldon. And we had a call just a couple of weeks ago with Director Wigan and also the Vice Chancellor. And Director Wigan expressed your same sentiments and, you know, said as a public agency, you know, he's unsure that our board would approve hosting it at a location like this, just given the rising costs. And so he really did ask them to either waive fees, you know, give discounts. And so I think everything is on the table right now, and we are just waiting for UCI to come back to us to see if they could do anything.
Okay. Maybe they can get this is like what you charge if I rented a building and had a concert there for profit.
Right.
I think we should have a letter written up to the chancellor.
Okay.
And if that would be the pleasure of the committee as well, laying out our concerns and asking for a refund for some of the costs that we spent and for going forward, how we could have this cost or we'll have to move on. And it's unfortunate. I mean, just this is in light of what we're doing, this is just ridiculous that we're being gouged like this. That the senior staff for the UC for UCI has allowed this to go on, that approves this.
We can certainly send a letter if it's the pleasure of the committee. Yes,
that's my. I would recommend. I hope my colleagues would join me in that. A polite, appropriate letter, but I think a strong letter. Okay, I'll make that motion if anyone would like to second it.
I'm giving him a chance. I'm happy to second it, but I was waiting to hear from someone else, possibly. Okay, I'll second that. And are there any other hands raised?
There are no other hands raised.
Okay. So with that motion and a second, we need to take a vote on that.
Okay. Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Whitaker?
Aye.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
That motion passes 5-0.
Thank you, Director Sheldon. I do have one other follow-up, just a curiosity. We received sponsor support. It was around $60,000. Did we have a goal in mind, or was there a budget for that? How did we do versus, if that's the case?
Yeah, I believe that the goal for that is 70,000. Although since COVID, we've been working our way back up, so it's increased over the years. But yeah,
no good. I was just wanting to assess the progress on.
Yes, it was an increase from the year before, so we're happy about that.
Okay, great. We are now at the Orange County Summit Water Summit update.
I believe Gina.
Thank you, Chair Whitaker. A brief update. So MODOC is leading off the planning efforts for the Orange County Water Summit this time around, and it is taking place on Friday, September 27th. At the West and South Coast Plaza, we have secured Fritz Coleman back as a master of ceremonies, and the theme that has been decided upon by the committee is Liquid Logic, the fusion of finance, tech, and water. So the planning committee continues to meet monthly. Our next meeting is June 24th. And the next slide just kind of gives an idea of what the program looks like so far, although not all of the speakers have been reached out to, but this draft program is a result of the May planning meeting. So you'll see there are 5 sessions. Making water a priority at the federal level, a cyber session, financing the future of water, conservation as a California way of life, and shift to clean energy. So these are the sessions that the committee has agreed upon and the speakers. So MODOC is working on reaching out to try to confirm some of these speakers, and we'll have an update on the progress of that next committee meeting.
But personally, I like the theme very much. It just sounds intriguing, kind of cutting edge a little bit. Any other comments from anyone on virtual?
Chairman Whitaker.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say that I am concerned about the theme. I don't think it goes with our water supply emphasis that we've always had, and I would prefer a different theme. And I think the sessions that we have not been thought through based upon the questions I've raised during committee meetings. And I think these sessions have been imposed upon us as the committee, at least on as a desire more just to disregard any historic comments of how this has worked and disregard any practices that have been most successful practices, best management practices, and just go and a direction that doesn't have any that has little foundation or thought to it. So well, hopefully this will improve, and we're working to try to make improvements, but we'll see what comes from it.
I guess it's in the read of it, because I don't see that precluding water supply whatsoever. In fact, I would expect the same, that we would still as a priority address water supply, adequate water supply.
I'd like to have you on the committee with us, Mr. Chairman.
With that, no other questions out there? All right. Well, public affairs outreach report for May. Jean.
Thank you, Chair Whitaker. The full outreach packet is contained in the Comledge packet, but I wanted to highlight a few items for the month of May. So our community engagement continues to be very robust in terms of in-person and virtual as well. So we have here the Tours Speakers Bureau is continuing. We had 9 speaking engagements. Our tour program has really just ramped up tremendously. And in fact, next week, due to AWW ACE being in Anaheim, we have 10 tours alone next week. So tour program is definitely ramping up. In terms of awards, I would like to highlight that the event that was hosted last April for the GWRS final completion, we received an EPIC award from CAPIO for that, from the California Association of Public Information Officers, and a Best in Show. And so we shared that award along with our project partners, OC San. And then we continue to publish our monthly hydrospectives as well to 4,000 plus stakeholders. For legislative engagement for May activities, as Eric reported, there were DC meetings with Congressman Lou Correa, Congresswoman Young Kim, and then key committee, EPA, and Army Corps staff. And then on the state level, there was also a meeting with Assemblymember Dixon exploring sediment removal behind Prado Dam. For media, for the month of May, our outreach for media, the news hits that came in was about 12.3 million reach. And then our website continues to do quite well. So I don't know if you've noticed, if you log on, we are continuing to refine and enhance both from a kind of accessibility and then just user-friendly point of view. We're continuing to refine the website, working with the IT department. Our May webinar, it was hosted on May 22nd, and it was on South Basin. So we featured Bill Lever in our hydrogeology department, along with a representative from DTSC and the Regional Water Quality Control Board. So our webinars continue to do quite well, and they garner anywhere from like 150 to over 200 live views. And then we do have a lot of recorded views after. So those recordings do live on our website and then our YouTube as well. And then speaking of, I know Director Sheldon mentioned the Water Infrastructure Network Summit that took place last Friday. OCWD was a host committee member. Director Green was on a panel. And there will be a press release that goes out on the WINS event this week or next. And in it, Director Green, there is a quote from her kind of commending Senator Padilla, Congressman Correa, Congresswoman Kim for their support of PFAS funding and advocating for an exemption. Looking ahead, here are some of the events either that OCWD is hosting and or staffing. So this weekend is OC San's public kind of open house, and folks will be able to go and look around its new headquarters facility. So we are staffing that and giving out GWRS bottled water. And then we're also participating in an Anaheim event at their request. It's the Green Expo. So we'll have staff there as well. John mentioned last night there is the EPA PFAS briefing and tour, and that's taking place Monday, June 10th at 2 p.m. in Anaheim, and that is at the Linda Vista site, I believe it's called. So that will be a one-hour event. It'll be 2 to 3. And actually, Bruno, the acting administrator, he is in town because of the ACE conference put on by AWWA, and that's located in Anaheim. So that is the reason that his request coincided with that week. In addition, we have our next webinar will be August 7th, and that'll be from our R&D department on flow reversal, reverse osmosis. Our technical webinars seem to do really well, garnering an audience of 200 plus guests. So we're looking forward to that. And then we have, as mentioned, the OC Water Summit, September 27th. And then we are continuing to host our annual groundwater adventure tour, and that date is October 24th. On the next slide, I just wanted to take a moment. I know at last night's board meeting, it was mentioned and discussed some good comments about hosting events or dedication events for some of our PFAS treatment plants to showcase this effort and showcase some of the funding that has been received for it. So I did want to report out that we have had past events, and I know it was in 2022, so that was a little bit ago, but we did have a dedication event at Serrano Water District in September of 2022 that was attended by Congresswoman Young Kim. We had an event at Yorba Linda Water District, also attended by Young Kim. And then Garden Grove opted not to have an event, but they did produce a video that had a lot of reach and impressions, and it broadcasted on its public access channel and its website. They interviewed Garden Grove officials along with OCWD folks. So we're working with the producers to offer that, you know, the opportunity to hold an event, and OCWD staff can certainly help with all of that. Not all producers are inclined to do this for different reasons, but we are continuing to make that offer, and we will continue to reach out to them. So some future events that are in the works in September, Chris Olson just confirmed that East Orange County Water District would like to host a PFAS dedication. And then the city of Santa Ana also would like to host one or two in late summer. So those are some that we are working on, and we'll continue to work on this effort and also reach out to our legislators to see if there's any events that they would like us to host or tours to feature the partnership in bringing these plants online. And that concludes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Sheldon has a question.
Director Sheldon.
Just like to say, great job, Gina. Thank you for all the work.
Thank you. Thank you, Director.
Seeing no others, I just had one comment. I hearken back to that award. It's great to be able to say that you won an EPIC award, right? That's a great title for something like that. So thank you, Gina. Appreciate it. And with that, completes our action items for today. So I would recommend that that we agendize for the June 19th board meeting item number 2 and item number 3, both our state and federal legislative updates. And with that, we are at the point for any director's announcements or reports.
Chairman Whitaker, I'd just like to make a comment regarding the letter that I proposed to to UCI. I do, of course, think we should circle back with Director Weidland as to what work he is doing. I don't want to undermine anything, and I appreciate all of that, and it would be to support that. So that would be the context of that letter. Thank you.
Yeah, that's an important communication. Thanks. Seeing nothing else, General Manager's announcement or report?
I just wanted to report that the next meeting is July 4th, so we will cancel that. And probably won't reschedule it, depending on what's going on.
Gotcha.
At that point in time, yeah.
Nothing on Singapore?
Yeah, I think the committee can let the general manager know whether we reschedule it or not.
Okay. Sounds great. So with that, we are adjourned. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.